baby, we go to the World Series again. Oh, baby.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
Ground ball third, Moustakas has got it. To first, Royals win it. Royals win the series. What a finish.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault World Series edition. It's been a little bit since we recorded last time. It was after the division series because the ALCS was just so much craziness that we wanted to wait until it was done one way or the other, so we knew what we were talking about. And thankfully for us, the season is continuing on, and we're talking about the World Series, the New York Mets. But first, before we get into that, I am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, of course, El Rey Americano, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm all right. I'm finally getting my voice back from this weekend. So
yes,
this is good timing for us to actually record something.
Right. Fun times at Kelly's Westport. And after the game, I went out and met Mike and some other people. We had a fun time.
We celebrated fully. my yes. Saturday was very laid back, I'll say.
Yes, there's a reason we didn't record on Saturday. We'll put it that way.
Right.
But we have a special guest. As I mentioned, we're talking about the World Series, talking about the New York Mets, and joining us now, Gary Mack from the podcast Mets Musings. Gary, how are you doing on this fantastic Monday evening?
I am doing fine, guys, and thanks so much for having me on. It's going to be a great World Series, and I'm sure you're going crazy in Kansas City, much like there's a frenzy here in New York for our New York Mets.
Absolutely, man. And thank you absolutely for coming on. It's always great when we can get the other fans' perspective and kind of your podcast. Mike and I have listened to some of them, and it's just you're the same kind of thing as we are. Lifetime fan, just love your team. So it's awesome to see really passionate fans of other teams. But we'll kind of get into it here with just a few questions about your Mets. We'll start with coming from as a Mets fan going into this series. What are you most confident about from a Mets perspective facing the Royals?
Starting pitching. Without a doubt, starting pitching is our strong suit right now. We have four young guys going, but they are flamethrowers, and yet they throw fastballs about 61% of the time. They've learned how to pitch. It's been a great season watching a kid like Noah Syndergaard, who's going to pitch game three, just grow. I mean, he came up as this flamethrower in May and has just progressed and learned how to pitch. And but that's where our confidence is right now, in the starting pitching. And, you know, not to knock the Royals pitching, but we're a little bit familiar with some of those guys, Cueto, Valquez, Chris Young played with the Mets. So there's not that, you know, I don't know who we're playing that much, because they haven't played in Kansas City since 2004, I believe it was. And so there's not that, and I don't know how much the Royals have seen of the Mets pitching, but definitely we're super confident in our pitching right now.
With good reason. Those are, golly. I mean, and that's definitely, I think, from a Kansas City perspective, that's the one element that's probably the most off-putting for us, is that, okay, that's a lot of good pitching. Even when the Royals faced Houston, when they faced Toronto, like, they're, you know, they're not all aces on those staffs. They're all good, but they're not like these guys that, you know, you just look up and down, and that's a an impressive group. Plus also being a Royals fan, seeing them all year, I know that they don't necessarily do that great the first time they see a pitcher. That's kind of got me a little bit worried. The kind of balance of that is that your guys throw hard. The Royals, as everybody's kind of noting, the Royals make really good contact on hard throwing pitching. So for, you know, like you were talking about Syndergaard and his growth and these right. guys who know how to pitch, what's if they don't want to go to the fastball, I know there's a lot of good slider instruction in the Mets system. And these guys have some good sliders. Is that going to be is it going to be a diet of sliders so that the Royals can't just sit on the fastball and try to, you know, flick that into right field and keep the thing, you know, keep the line moving, as we say out here?
Right. Well, there's a number of things. They all throw sliders. They all throw curves to some extent. And change-ups is a big weapon, too. DeGrom's got a very good change-up that he can go to. In fact, in Game 5 against the Dodgers, he really didn't have the good fastball. So he actually changed the way he was pitching in mid-range and started throwing a lot of breaking stuff. Mostly sliders and change-ups, and mixed in a fastball, and really got to, I think it was the seventh inning he got to in that game. Did the same thing against the Cubs. He struggled a little bit in the first couple of innings, but changed the way he pitched and came back with that. And actually, Harvey did in one of his games, too. He was struggling. He went to the off-speed stuff. Now, of course, you got to hope that you have that in your, you know, that you have the feel for it and everything before you can really throw it. But they've been very successful doing that so far in the playoffs. Syndergaard is the guy that's still throwing smoke. He got up to 100 miles per hour against the Dodgers in a relief appearance during that series. Pitched pretty good against the Cubs in his appearance. And Steven Matz kind of... He's got the 95-mile-an-hour fastball, but he's also got, if he's on, he's got a terrific slider and a big breaking curve. So they've all kind of got the pitches, but I would expect to see a lot of sliders and a lot of changeups. Changeups seems to be a big thing with this pitching staff as well.
And, Gary, you... Another thing on top of there's kind of two topics with the Mets, it seems, so far: the pitching, as you just detailed, and then the tsunami that is Daniel Murphy so far in the playoffs. So I think for a lot of people, and people that maybe you're just kind of a little bit more on the casual side in terms of their fandom, that don't necessarily follow, you know, everything going on in baseball, it may seem a little bit of a surprise maybe to see Daniel Murphy have such a explosive postseason so far. So is it as surprising for Mets fans, or is this something that you guys have kind of hoped for, you know, years, and he's finally kind of breaking out? What's the feeling around how Daniel Murphy's postseason has gone so far?
It's shocking. It really is. Nobody expected him to have this kind of power. He's turning on the ball better. He's worked with the hitting coach for that, and has decided, you know, he's not going to turn into a home run hitter. The last game against the Cubs, he had two hits to left field. So he still got the stroke. He still understands what, but he has been dangerous with the long ball, and it really did come out of nowhere. I mean, he hit 14 homers all season, and six in the playoffs so far. So he's almost hit half of his year's homers. But he has been a phenomenal player in the playoffs, and I don't know if he's just one of those guys that's a money player. You know, some guys just are good when the chips are on the line and the pressure's on them. But he has been fantastic. He carried this team through the playoffs so far, and it's just an incredible run that he's been on.
Is there a little maybe some nerves on whether or not he's going to cool off? He had not a long delay, but you know the sweep always kind of brings the questions of, oh, but how is the team going to, you know, the Royals dealt with it last year after sweeping the Orioles. How are they going to deal with the delay between ALCS and the World Series. Is there any kind of nervousness on that, that since he's been such a big part of the team, if he goes cold, what's going to happen?
Yeah, there is, but there's a concern across the whole team, but you know, with everybody feeling that way. But I try to look at it this way, that the pitchers are going to be all well-rested, and there's been some concern that a couple of the guys may be getting fatigued, and now that's not really going to be a question because they're going to have that rest. As far as Murphy goes, yeah, he could cool off, but Duda got hot. He has been terrible the whole playoffs, the first baseman Lucas Duda, but the last game against the Cubs, he had 5 RBIs and hit a big home run, and he can hit the ball out of Yellowstone Park. He's so So if he gets hot, he's going to be a big problem for you guys as well, because there's just no ball. I know it's a big ballpark in Kansas City, but there's no ballpark to contain this guy if he's hot. You know, we saw it was a streak during the season where he went, I think he hit 9 homers in 8 games or something. And that was against the Nationals, and I think the Cardinals were thrown in there. So it wasn't, you know, he wasn't playing the Brewers or the Marlins or the Braves or the Phillies or something like that. He was playing against some good pitching, and really he could get hot. And he's so streaky, he can get hot at any time, and he could be a big problem as well. And then, of course, there's Yoenis Cespedes, who you guys are probably familiar with from his days in Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
Division. So you know what he can do. He's a little banged up, but I think he'll be ready to play. So there's a little bit of concern, but there are some guys that have been not cold, but let's say lukewarm, that may come around. Travis d'Arnaud is a very good hitter.
Mm-hmm.
He's been struggling a little bit, but he had a couple of very good games. Another guy that's a little streaky, Curtis Granderson, of course, he's had a fantastic year. And anything that concerns you guys with your team that you'd be worried about?
Oh, goodness. The thing that we've talked about a lot of times, I mean, you know, we watch a lot of baseball, but obviously most of it is the Royals. And so, and I'm sure you run into this too, where you notice the tendencies, you notice the holes in someone's swing that maybe not everybody sees. Mm-hmm. So, like, I know that Eric Hosmer can get really pull happy and start hitting the ball to the second baseman all the time. He can sometimes chase balls down in a way that he's not going to ever hit. You know, you can kind of tell when your Yordano Ventura is going to start to lose it a little bit. And so for me at this stage, I don't know what Jeff might say to this, but for me, I'm mostly worried that the strength on strength matchup of, you know, hard throwing pitchers and guys who can hit hard throwing pitchers isn't going to go our way, that, you know, the lineup is going to get, you know, a little bit of a cold spell. And especially if they're going to be mixing in off-speed pitches, if they're going to be, you know, mixing the sequencing up, that could really throw the Royals off. They're not a patient team. They don't get a lot of pitches against starters sometimes. Their kind of game is really to try to, you know, get 3 or 4 runs in an inning and really chase somebody out. If that doesn't happen, you see what happened in, like, game 5 against Marco Estrada, who just dominated them, and he wasn't really, you know, he's thrown 89. And that's kind of what they run into. So if the Mets are using their off-speed stuff, that's going to get me worried, because the Royals are vulnerable to that. It seems like they're really good against the fastball stuff because they just want to put it in play. But if you're mixing it up on them, they can be really quiet, and you don't get into this thing. The same kind of, I guess, that Rex Hudler calls it frenzy hitting. Where you just kind of just, you know, you saw it against Houston, you saw it against David Price, you just, you know, where you're just hitting it and moving it along. And for a team that doesn't hit home runs, that can be a problem, because you're kind of relying on the ball to go into play and be hit hard enough that the defense has to make a tough play on it. And so that's my biggest worry, is those pitchers mixing it up on the Royals and kind of getting them really aggressive for a fastball, and then it breaks and dives away from them, and they're left holding the bat.
So, Gary, we've kind of talked about what you're looking forward to, or what you're confident about. So, give me, what's the one thing that you're least confident about heading into the series?
Well, I think I'd have to say the least confident thing would probably be the I don't want to call it middle relief, but where you guys are strong in the seventh and eighth inning, we've had some issues in the bullpen with that. Now, the team is a little different than it was early in the year because we've moved two starting pitchers, Bartolo Colon and John Neese, into the bullpen. So we have that veteran sort of leadership out there, and they've done a pretty good job coming in relief. But really, Addison Reed has done a good job, but at times he struggled. If he's come in the middle of an inning, he's more suited to start an inning. And when he starts an inning, he's been very dominant. But coming in the middle of an inning, he seems to struggle for whatever reason. And Tyler Clippert, when he first got here, he was awesome. He was unhittable. And then he had a little bit of a back thing and struggled then the last couple of weeks of the season. And even in the playoffs, he had a good performance and a not so good. He got out of the inning, but, you know, it wasn't one of these dominant things. He made you nervous, let's put it that way. So that's probably the part that concerns us. We're not concerned with Jeurys Familia, the closer. He has been awesome all year. It lights out. He had one little streak where he struggled a little bit, but picked it up again and has been just dynamite the rest of the way. So no concerns about the closer. The problem is going to get from the starting pitcher to the closer. If they can, you know, pitch 7-8 innings and get to him, then we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I think that's a concern for me. They're just going to go from Syndergaard to Familia, and it's just going to just go right to it. Because, again, the Royals, you know, they're not going to work a pitcher too much. That's just not their nature. I haven't gotten anybody on record to say it's an organizational thing, but it's pretty clear that your whole lineup and your whole farm system doesn't like to walk. It's pretty clear what the idea is. So, and that's more true than ever this year. So, but I think you're right. I think the one thing that kind of interests me about that bullpen is that, you know, with Colon in there, he's kind of like your guy. Like, that's, you know, he's the first guy out of there, it seems like. And, you know, he doesn't throw hard and he can still cover a lot of innings. And so we've seen a lot of him.
Yeah.
And that's another guy that, you know, like I said, the Royals are vulnerable to kind of off-speed stuff. I mean, if you're throwing, you guys throwing 95 to 98 and then you bring in Colon, I mean, that's pretty tough. We saw it in the Houston series. Yordan Ventura in game one came out throwing 98, 99 to Houston. And then there's a rain delay and we came in with Chris Young right behind him and they couldn't touch him.
Yeah.
And so it's such a stark difference that that could be pretty interesting to kind of see that play out too. So that's just my concern is the Royals hitters is just how they're going to adjust. If they, you know, just go out there and have the right approach, I feel pretty good, but I could definitely see a couple shutouts in there and that makes me nervous.
But you guys handled R.A. Dickey, and there's no more guy
that can keep
you off more than he can, you know. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see what goes down. Is the speed of the Royals going to play a big part of this? They haven't really thrown a lot in this playoffs. Do you think they'll try to pick up that pace at all?
I think, especially once you get into the National League games, where you kind of have to maneuver a little bit, they're probably going to go that route. They've actually had pretty good power in this offseason or this postseason where they've put the ball over the fence in just about every game. So they haven't necessarily needed to go to the same kind of running attack that they did last year that was so effective. And, you know, I think a lot of their damage has mostly been on getting extra bases once it's in play and not necessarily the stolen base. So, you know, the best example of that is Lorenzo Cain's run in game six, where, you know, he just read it perfectly and just never stopped. But the Royals have a lot of guys who they're not necessarily going to go first to home, but they'll take first to third and they'll go second to home quite often. And I think that's probably where the most impact, at least in my opinion, is going to be. Jeff, I don't know if you think they're going to steal a bit more or not.
I don't know. One of the things I know is the Royals are very good about doing their homework about opposing pitchers. You know, last year, you know, now it's kind of
Coons
had a few. Rusty Coons does a great job of that.
Yep.
And there's a last year there was it was kind of a hushed thing about John Lester in the wild card game and how he doesn't throw to first. And now it's kind of old news now, but that was the big thing that they knew they were going to try and take advantage of. And that was another thing with game six, talking about Lorenzo Cain running, you know, that they did a lot of research and they knew in that situation, they knew where Jose Bautista was going to throw which cutoff guy he was going to throw to. And so they knew they could take that chance to get Lorenzo Cain home, and it worked out. So, I don't know offhand, you know, what the kind of the Mets pitcher's tendencies are, but I do know that's something that if the Royals see an advantage with any other pitchers, any sort of tendencies that they can pick up on, then they won't fail to take advantage of it. So, you know, that's definitely something to keep in the back of the mind. And I always felt like, you know, they led the league last year in stolen bases, and this year they were second in the league, and, you know, they definitely run a lot. But I think more of where you see where the Royals' kind of aggressive base running mentality paid off is, like Mike was saying, with stuff like Lorenzo Cain's, first to home on those. They do their research for those situations, so they know when they can and can't be aggressive, and they take every opportunity to be aggressive. And I think that's what kind of has made the Royals special this year, because if you give them an inch, they'll take it. And you know, over the course of a season, if you take enough of them, it's going to amount to more runs and it's going to amount to more wins. So that's one of the things that as a fan of the Royals, it's been really exciting to watch this year.
And that's a little bit of a concern here with the Mets, because the outfield arms are not the best, except for, of course, if you're looking at Cespedes. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to run on him. He's got a gun. But Granderson's arm's not that terrific. He's improved his getting rid of it quicker, so you know, to try to hold the runners. The guy that's going to be a big question mark for you guys is Conforto, if he's playing left field, because the guy doesn't look like he's got a great arm, and he doesn't have a great arm, but he's very accurate. He hits the cutoff man all the time, and he has been throwing guys out like crazy. Maybe because they tried to go on him and they shouldn't have, but he's going to be the wild card in all of this to see how he plays. And of course, the other thing is if they move Cespedes to left and play Lagares in center, Lagares, of course, a Gold Glove center fielder, but he struggled a little bit with his throwing this year. He had a little bit of an elbow problem and hasn't had the same arm strength, hasn't thrown the ball as well as he did last year. But you know, still he's got a pretty deep arm and can cause some problems out there. So, but I think Conforto is going to be the guy to watch. And we were saying a minute ago talking about lineups, he's the guy to watch in the lineup as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the things for your offense was it's basically two different seasons, pretty much, is what it comes down to is. Weren't they last just before the trade deadline, or was that in June?
Yeah, they were terrible. I mean, they had everybody brings up, I forget the date now, but sometime in June, we had John Mayberry Jr. hitting cleanup in a game. So it was a brilliant move that Sandy Alderson made. Again, it was the move to bring up, he brought up Michael Conforto from double A ball. Now I saw Michael Conforto last year in Brooklyn here at the short season A league game, Brooklyn Cyclones, the farm team of the Mets. And I was telling everybody, this kid can hit. He came out of college. He could hit. He hit the all fields. He drove the ball. They took a chance. They brought him up. he did so well. He started the season in high A, went to double A, was really on his way to triple A this season, and they took a chance and brought him up, and he delivered. I forget his final average. I think he struggled a little bit at the end, but he hit like 270. But for a rookie, and six home runs, for a rookie to come up in, when did he come up? July, I think, and to hit 270 is pretty darn good, and he played a lot. So he did well. He really did well. Hit a homer off of Greinke in the Dodgers series. But he's done very well. And then they got Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe. I don't know if Uribe is even on the roster for this. I haven't seen the roster.
I haven't seen
yet.
It either, yeah.
Yeah. But they came through. They lengthened the bench, and that was the first move. Brought in Tyler Clippert and then Addison Reed. And, of course, the big move was Cespedes, who went just crazy the first, I don't know. He really carried.
It was immediate.
Oh, yeah. It was just unbelievable. I think he hit 17 home runs since July 31st or something. And he got a little cold.
I read that today, yeah, that was 17.
He was just unbelievable. And hitting, too. I mean, you know, he was driving in runs and hitting doubles and stuff and home runs. And he just really made everybody better in the lineup. And, of course, on top of that, David Wright came back. He had been out with a spine injury, and it started as a hamstring, and then they found this spinal stenosis, which, of course, doesn't go away, but he was out since April and came back and has been playing very well offensively and defensively. Struggled a little bit in some of the playoffs, but got some big hits at both ends of the spectrum in the Dodgers and then later in the Cubs series. So he's another guy that could be a problem if he gets hot. And Travis d'Arnaud was injured twice this season and came back. And so he's still kind of feeling his roots. But it's going to be an interesting series, I think. And I think it's going to be a pitcher's series. And I'm just hoping that Oz can come out on top.
Well, you said earlier that you've seen, and obviously, you know, Volquez and Cueto have National League roots and everything. Is there, I mean, are you just like smelling blood in the water with Cueto with his struggles of the last couple of months? Or is it something where you think he's going to turn it on and you're going to see the same guy you saw with Cincinnati?
You know, Cueto, I think a lot of his stuff is a head case, I think. I mean, you guys have probably seen more of him this year than I have, but
it's a little weird.
Yeah,
he's a strange dude.
Yeah, he's kind of
brilliant,
weird.
And then just lose it all of a sudden. So I don't know. I think we're hoping, you know, that he can lose it again naturally. and Volquez is another one that he can be really good or really bad. So as I say, it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, I've been reading all these comparisons position by position and everything, and I don't agree with all of them, and you know, picks and everything like that. But I think it's going to be an interesting series to see what develops as far as the pitching and the strengths. As you said, the power pitching against the Royals lineup, they like to hit fastballs. The right-handed, your whole pitching rotation is right-handed as far as the starters go, and the left-handers on our team are usually, it's the bit of a stronger lineup when we go in that direction. Sometimes they'll take Conforto out against the lefty, most times, and play either a Kadir or somebody else out in left field, a right-handed hitter. So that's going to be another interesting fact to see that right-handing dominant pitching on your rotation against our left-handed hitting guys. So it's going to be a lot of games within the games to look for in this series.
Go ahead, Jeff.
There's a lot of interesting kind of like you were just talking about, little kind of mini storylines, if you will. And you kind of ran down, or at least from the Mets season, you know, just maybe kind of why it's been kind of Jekyll and Hyde, if you will, from first half to second half, just because of all those injuries and stuff. And any team that gets to this point, you're going to have to fight through injuries, because it's just not really possible to go 162 game season without dealing with some. And the Royals have had some of their own. You know, they had Alex Gordon missed a couple months, and Lorenzo Cain has just been banged up here and there, and Salvador Perez all the same. So, you know, it's right now, you know, they have their lineup that, you know, they would want, but you've got Alex Gordon hitting eighth because he's been a little slow, still you know, still not fully 100% back. You can kind of tell. And you know, Salvador Perez, I mean, the dude is just a monster back there. He's so big, he takes such a beating all the time, and just getting hit by
that one game against Toronto. I mean, he got, I don't know, he was woozy and everything else, and then gets hit on the leg, and he's getting
he played that game with food poisoning too.
Holy cow.
I think he homered anyway. It's just he's I don't know what his thing is, but he's Rasputin. You can't get him out of the lineup.
Yeah, it's insane. He just
really, so
no. And he loves playing the game of baseball, but so there's, you know, there's some slight concerns about, you know, Salvi. You know, usually you think at this point, even people with injuries can kind of sack up for seven games and get through it. But, you know, some of the guys that you've talked about that have been a big part of the team, you know, and Cespedes and, you know, Curtis Granderson, and those are two guys specifically that are a little banged up. I mean, what's the concern level there in terms of their health heading into the series?
There's not really a lot of concern about it. You know, I think this time off has helped with the little nagging things that can go on. And, of course, Cespedes is kind of a question mark. But he took a cortisone shot, and everything seems to be fine. He says he's not 100%, but he'll be okay to go. So there's really not a lot of concern. I think there's so much confidence in the young pitching, and that could be a mistake. But I think that the fans are just thinking along that lines and think that we can outpitch. And if we can outpitch and hit, you know, there's a lot of, I know you guys are probably younger than this. I'm an old man, but there's a lot of similarities between this team and the 1969 team. And that is the great pitching. They had Seaver and Koosman and Nolan Ryan and Gary Gentry. And there's a lot of comparison with these guys. They made the big trade at the deadline. In that case, it was getting first baseman Don Clendenin. In this case, it was Cespedes that really carried the home runs and such. And that's what I think a lot of people are looking at and think that they can do something as similar to that team that defeated a very good Baltimore Oriole team that was, you know, unbeatable, supposedly, and they took them apart. So I think there's a lot of hope in the pitching, the pitch, and just get enough hitting to get by, and the pitching will take care of the rest.
So then, from as a Mets fan, just coming since we're all here, you know, what are the questions you guys have that maybe Mike and I can kind of help shed some light on in terms of just about the Royals and about the, we've kind of discussed, you know, how the Royals like to run and things like that. But, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you know, it's been, I think you're right, the 04, you know, since they've played in Kansas City. I mean, these two teams just don't see each other very often. So, you know, what are some of the questions that Mets fans have about the Royals?
Well, I think a lot of the Mets fans, the questions are going to be about the pitching at the end, the seventh, eighth, and ninth guys that you got with Davis. And I tell you the truth, I'm not so impressed with Mattson. Mattson's been hit around quite a bit in the playoffs, I think. And but the other guys in there that we don't know that well, those and what we've heard and watched on television in last year's World Series and the playoffs this year, the shutdown those guys do, they really shorten the game. So I think that's the question and the weather has been a big question that came up today about how the weather is going to be for game one. There's reports that there might be some rain. Maybe you can answer that question.
Yeah, what I heard on the rain part is that the first report was that it was maybe going to be early afternoon, maybe a little bit later, just very, you know, scattered showers, nothing heavy. And then I think I saw another thing that is like 60% through the night to rain. So I don't know. We're kind of snake bit on that because the game one in Houston that had the rain delay, it wasn't supposed to really rain at all. And it rained pretty heavily. So we're kind of not on great terms with our weathermen right now. But it's the Midwest. It's like if you don't like the weather, you just wait 5 minutes and it changes. So that's just how we're used to it.
But that's a little bit of a concern because, you know, you don't want to start a pitcher. I mean, even for you guys, too. You don't want to start a guy and then have a rain delay. And then what do? Do you bring? I know they're not going to bring back Harvey if there's any substantial rain delay.
It'd be worth it to watch Scott Boras freak out, though.
Or watch the Marlins, man. Is this guy going to be there again?
I would guarantee he's going to be.
He's, I don't think he left from the ALCS. I think he's still here.
He was at the Chiefs game yesterday.
And I heard on the radio someone saw him in the mall today. So I think he's just sticking around, just riding it through.
And how does he get these tickets?
He's got the money. I'm not sure. He's independently wealthy somehow. I'm not sure exactly. I thought I heard someone say last year maybe he was a lawyer of some sort or is a lawyer. I'm not sure.
I heard.
When does he work then?
Yeah, good question. I'm not sure. I mean, if he's a, you know, partner, maybe he owns his own firm or something. And so he just, you know, hey, I'm taking the week off. And that's what it is, which that's the life if you can get it.
Boy, I'll tell you.
He doesn't have any, you know, doesn't have a wife or kids or anything. So he can just kind of, it's all discretionary income, I suppose. And he's done some interviews around town, and I'm not sure if you had heard recently in Kansas City, we actually lost two firefighters in a fire a couple weeks ago, and he actually donated $10,000 to each of their families. So, you know, everything from interviews and that kind of stuff, you know, it's kind of goofy with the Marlins stuff behind home plate and all that and everything. And some people were kind of upset about it last year, but I think that most of that's kind of died down because he's shown to be, through interviews and some of the stuff that he's done, actually a pretty stand-up guy. So that's a positive at least.
Yeah. He seems to be pretty nice, but that's the questions going on now. It's again the pitching versus the hitting and the bullpen. Can they shut it down as well? And can Kansas City come back if they're down in the game? I mean, we know they can come back, but are you confident? Would you rather be playing with a lead or without a lead or coming from behind?
I'd rather have a lead. I think the way the Royals win this series is they get those leads early and they hang on to them. They're exciting when they make those comebacks. It is exciting like nothing else, especially given the moment. But I would not sneeze at, like, the first game of the ALCS Jeff and I were at, and the Royals won it 5-0 and, you know, obviously led the whole time. And that was a lot better than the next day where you're basically getting owned by David Price until somehow miraculously you're not. So I think that's what the Royals' goal is really going to be, is to try to get a lead early, try to get the starters through the lineup twice, maybe if they're dealing, try to get a couple extra outs. But once you're in that sixth inning, they're ready to go to the bullpen. And, with 4 to 7 games left, they're going to be ready to go with, you know, whoever they want. Herrera is pitching about as well as I've seen him. Wade Davis has been so great the last 2 years. And those are going to be the guys that I think are going to get the most opportunities. Madsen, like you said, he's been hit pretty hard. It's probably fatigue with him. He's missing his spots a lot. Obviously, he hasn't pitched in the league in like 3 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's understandable. Luke Hochaver is also a guy coming off Tommy John surgery, so they're probably not going to go that much with him. But I think one of the wild cards in this bullpen is going to be Danny Duffy, who didn't really get a lot of – action in the series against Toronto because they're such a bunch of right-handed power hitters. But with all the lefties that you've got in your lineup, especially the effective ones, you know, Murphy obviously is kind of the key right now. I think he's going to end up being one of those guys kind of in the mix, you know, especially situationally, because he's shown a lot of success as a left-handed, just as a starter for one, but as a reliever as well at different times. So I think that's the idea. The Royals want to try to get a lead within five innings, really kind of, you know, hold the hand of our starters through that point and then turn it over the bullpen and just let them go to work. Cause they, that was the formula last year and all season. And, there's Ned Yost is nothing if not consistent in, kind of going with his roles, pushing the buttons. So, that's kind of how I see the bullpen playing in. If it's, if they're playing from behind, then it's going to be tough because you're going to try to be playing against, coming back against good starting pitching. And, guys like Cologne and Nice, who are effective major league starters, just because they're in the bullpen doesn't mean that they're not effective. So, I think definitely I want to lead. That's my approach.
I think that with Madsen's kind of the big topic because he's been kind of the weak point in terms of how he's been able to be hit around a little bit in the postseason. But there was a point where he was just nails during the season, and he had a really great season. So it's kind of weird. Do you bank on that, or do you kind of say, hey, maybe he's getting tired, maybe we should kind of change his role a little bit? And Luke Hochaver is one that probably, he is kind of the bust label because he was a number one overall pick, meant to be a starter, and he hasn't really found success until he moved to the bullpen a couple of years ago, and then he had Tommy John last year, so he wasn't really a part of that, all the hoopla around the bullpen last year when they made the run to the World Series. So he's kind of a new commodity as far as the national people, and nationally people are probably concerned with. So those are the kind of wild cards. We know what Herrera is going to give us. We know what Wade Davis is going to give. It's how are Madsen, Hochaver, especially as right-handers going up against all the left-handed power in the order. How is that going to match up? So the one thing we're probably most confident about in Kansas City is the bullpen, but all the same, looking at just the bullpen matchups, those two might be, and then as Mike was saying, kind of the role that Danny Duffy is going to play. So as you alluded to, it's going to be a lot of fun watching these kind of little battles because there's so many unknowns between the two teams, but so many different storylines where the matchups could go real big one way or the other, but then it's baseball. You never know. Yeah, so sure. It could just completely flip and you think, oh, maybe the Mets bullpen comes up big and it's the Royal starters that go deep into games, and who knows?
Well, one thing we do know, that the World Series winner will have a blue cap on. So
that is
no matter what.
With certainty, we can say this.
Bank on that for sure.
And I don't think either fan base is going to be thrilled with Joe Buck.
Yeah. See, I can take Joe Buck. It's Harold Reynolds that drives me.
Oh, nuts. Yeah. Well, that, yeah.
Share as well.
That's just assumed.
I find it hard that this guy actually played baseball. And, somebody's got to tell him to shut up once in a while because he just, I just see him. He's always straddling the fence. He's on this side. He comes out with this strong statement, and then somebody counteracts it, and he goes, yeah, you're right. And then he's on the other side. I mean, it's just, I don't know how he's got a job even, but hey,
He played the game.
That's right. That's it.
He played the game.
All right. So should we do predictions? I mean, I think we kind of have an idea, but I'm interested. I think these teams are fairly similar in some ways, but they're also very different in a lot of ways. Like there's obviously a lot of talent, but there's a lot of like lineup balance among both teams. There are some dynamic arms on both teams, and there's good stories on both teams too. So I think it's going to make for a pretty special thing. I'm clearly biased, so I'm thinking the Royals are going to win it. I'm thinking probably six games sounds about right. And I'm going to say Eric Hosmer MVP.
Okay, wow.
So, Gary, I'm going to let you make your Mets call.
Well, I'm going to go with the Mets in, you know, again, they say there's a lot of similarities with 69, but I think five games is not giving the Royals enough credit. So I'm going to say Mets in seven, and I'm going to go with it's a weird feeling. Lucas Duda is going to be the MVP. And, you know, in a weird way, last year the Royals was the Cinderella team.
Yeah.
Nobody expected him to be there. And I think this year it's a possibility that the Mets are that Cinderella team. And based on what's been happening so far, I sat here and watched those series and said, I don't believe this. They're the series came up and you were like, well, let's win one game so we're not embarrassed, you know?
Right.
And then they win the first two. And then they go into Wrigley Field and we're saying, okay, well, you know, they might lose here in Wrigley Field. And then they win three. And I go, no, they can't sweep. That's Wrigley Field. They're not going to sweep there. And then they swept them. So I'm going to say Mets in seven. And I just think that there's some neat mojo going on there and it's going to take them.
Yeah, you know, you pretty much described the exact feeling that we had last year going in.
It was we were just happy to be in the wild card and then right, we win that. And it's like, well, it's gravy from here.
And then oh my God, we swept the number one seed in the AL and then we go into Baltimore and then we won the first two, just like you were saying. And then, well, surely in Camden Yards, they're going to start hitting home runs all over the place. And next thing you know, Royals are going to be, series going to be tied up and they took both of them. So we know where you're coming from on that. Just for me, I'll probably, again, obviously biased towards the Royals, but I think I'm going to go like Mike with Royals in six, but I think I'm going to go with Lorenzo Cain as the MVP. But if your prediction comes through, Gary, and the Royals lose another game seven at home in the World Series for the second year in a row, man, I don't know what I'll do. That would be tough.
Well, just keep in mind, it's so difficult to even get there, and to get there 2 years in a row is just an unbelievable thing. And there shouldn't be any reason why they can't at least make the playoffs next year. I don't think they go – well, they're going to lose a couple of guys, right? They'll probably lose Cueto. But, you know, sometimes you lose a guy like that and you pick up a guy that's even better. So, you know, there's some hope there, I think.
Yeah, the Royals have definitely kind of built themselves to be competitive for, you know, at least the next – 3 years or so. They've kind of got a little window here, just like I'm sure the Mets, everybody's probably talking about up there with all the young pitching they have. So I noticed looking at the schedule for next season, regardless of what happens here in the series, open up again Royals Mets. So whoever wins, we're going to have a rematch to start off the season. MLB probably couldn't have planned that better themselves if they wanted to, but yeah.
Or did they?
Yes. So maybe we'll have to have you on again to kind of start the next season. We can talk, and whoever wins, we can gloat, and then we can talk about the new season moving forward.
Sounds great. Anytime, I'm always available.
Well, hey, it was fantastic having you on, Gary. Thank you so much for taking the time. Always great to have an opposing team's fan perspective, especially one as knowledgeable and passionate as yourself. So we'll definitely have to have you on again sometime next season. And thanks for joining us,
man. Let's give them the website too for any of our listeners if they want to check out some Mets stuff. It's MetsMusings.com and on Twitter you're MetsMusings1. Right. So you know, give
and also let's not forget BaseballTalkRadio.com that we're both on.
There we go.
Of course, there you go. Nice little plug there. So. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, Gary. And good luck to your Mets in the series. Not too much.
But. Right. Exactly.
Thank you guys for having me and good luck to the Royals as well.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
The pitch to Orr. A little looping fly ball. Base hit. One out of ten. And that's right. Throw to the plate. He is.
The Vault.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, where you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Badette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.
Welcome in back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Big thanks to Gary McDonald, Gary Mack from Mets Musings. That's MetsMusings.com if you want to get some info on the Mets and study up before the World Series commences. Another interesting thing that Mike and I were talking about that we didn't really bring up in our discussion with Gary was the World Series roster. Looking at the Royals, and this team seems so familiar. It seems like we know everyone, and you know, the key players, obviously we do, but I mean, Mike, when you were looking at the roster, what were some of the interesting things that you noticed comparing 2014 to 2015?
Well, you go to a World Series once and you go a second year in a row, you kind of figure that it's basically the same team with maybe a couple extra pieces, but you know, just looking over everything, comparing, just it kind of just started with looking at the rotation, there was another article somewhere, I don't remember who wrote it, I'll find the link and we'll put it on the website when we post this, but it was talking about just some of the differences and some of the new players. I mean, obviously Cueto and Zobrist, midseason acquisitions, those guys are there, but you know, even just looking at the four-man rotation, Volquez was a new signee. Cueto was a trade target. Chris Young was a free agent signing in March. I mean, that's 3/4 of your rotation completely different from last year. Last year you had Shields, Vargas, and Guthrie along with Ventura, the only kind of carryover. And so, you know, you just look over the entire roster and there's like 13 players that were on last year's World Series roster that aren't on it this year. And so it's kind of counterintuitive to think that you would have that team turn around that many people and things like that. In some cases, it's just injury. Vargas, Greg Holland, Infante, Josh Willenham retired. Jeremy Guthrie just kind of stopped playing. Tim Collins, injured as well. Brandon Finnegan traded away. Noriyoki, free agent. Eric Kratz was let go, you know. So you kind of see some of that. And then you kind of bring in a lot of these newer guys. You know, they traded for Drew Butera back in May. They signed Rios in the offseason. They signed Morales in the Franklin Morales in the offseason, as well as Kendry Morales. He lost Billy Butler last year. So it just kind of struck me how strange it was to see so much change. And really, even among like the guys that, the new guys who were even in the organization, like Luke Hochaver, who came back from injury, and Paulo Orlando, who had been in the minors. It was just striking how much it kind of, it was, how strange it was to see that happen. The core guys are all there. I mean, obviously Hosmer, Moustakas, Escobar, Kane, Gordon, Perez, you know, those guys are all This is something they've been through together. Wade Davis, Kelvin Herrera, you know, they've already been a part of this. Duffy. So, you know, that in that sense, there's still a lot of, you know, people who had big roles last year who were there. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of just strange to see that happen. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to impact them in any way as far as like, okay, we've been here before, but like this half of the team really hasn't been there before. But the main guys have been there before. So that's kind of an interesting interplay to kind of look for in the World Series.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a credit to again, we'll say Dayton Moore, you know, and the kind of culture and the team that he's built, you know, and we kind of talked about going from last season to this season and some of the new pieces that they started the season with, you know, specifically in the bullpen, pitchers like, players like Chris Young and Ryan Madsen and so forth, and how it has that kind of Cardinals feel to it, that plug and play mentality, especially when you had, you know, Gordon go out for an extended period of time and players like Paolo Orlando could step in and give you some time in the outfield. And, you know, obviously they traded for Ben Zobrist, but just kind of that next man up mentality, if you will. And that is really a big key to an organization, to cultivating a winning organization. So it's really cool to see. It's surprising, but at the same time, really positive to see that big of a roster change from one year to the next and still be as good or better in the case that the Royals were. So definitely really interesting and really cool to see that.
Yeah, and at this point, it's not like they're not battle tested. I mean, you know, the tough series in Houston that, you know, basically pushed everybody to the brink, backs against the wall. Everybody came back, and then series against the Blue Jays, which is like everybody's dream series back in August, especially with all the like extracurricular stuff going on.
Yeah.
And the jawing back and forth and hit by pitch stuff.
Everyone said after that series in late July, early August, you know, it felt like a playoff series and it was going to be so fun to see those two in the playoffs if they met. And there it was, and it was just as nuts as everyone thought it would be.
Yeah, yeah, but I didn't want to see them again.
No. I'm glad they got out of it, but yeah, they're going to be scary for a couple of years to come. And speaking of which, we'll kind of dive into that here. We started off the show talking about looking forward to the Mets, but let's take a little bit to appreciate, you know, like Gary was saying, how hard it is to get back to the World Series, let alone a Game 7 2 years in a row. I mean, last year it was such a strange kind of weird feeling because it was, you know, obviously there was so much happy and so much elation in the town, but at the same time, it was almost this kind of numb shock to it because it was, you know, you had the nervousness with the wild card game because it was like, God, it's been so long since we've been here. We got to play in this stupid single game.
Right.
Let's please win this game. And then that's all I'm asking for this time. That's all I'm asking for this time. And they did. And it was in such unbelievable fashion. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh my God, they just swept the Angels. What the hell do we do? What's going on here? And then, you know, they win a couple against the Orioles. Like, man, this team's really special. Something's really happening here. And you turn around again and they're in the World Series and oh my God. And you just, everything was happening so fast. And, you know, there was obviously nervousness around the World Series last year, but there wasn't at least for me, you know, there wasn't this huge, intense kind of weird pressure because it was still just the shock subsiding from actually being there and then just being so happy to be so relevant and to be there again as Royals. But then this year has been, it's so completely different. You know, the feeling, like it's happiness is the
nerve-wracking.
Same, but it's been so nerve-wracking. And it was so, the difficulty in getting here has just been so intense. I mean, from going down 2-1 to the Astros, backs against the wall, down 4 runs in the 8th inning, about to be the Angels of last year, you know, best record in the AL, and then disappointment. And they fight and scratched and clawed and got their way all the way back and won that series amazingly. And then you come up against Toronto and, you know, big bad Toronto, basically, we're talking about this today, possibly the from trade deadline to the end of the year, possibly the best offense in Major League history relative to the league, the current state of the league. I mean, you can make that claim. You know, they basically were the 27 Yankees for 2 months. So, you know, they were, I mean, that was as formidable of an opponent as you could have. And they were, you know, battling the Royals the whole way for the number one seed. And thank God the Royals pulled it out. People were kind of poo-pooing it, saying it wasn't as big of a deal if they lost it. But it turned out to be a really huge deal.
Yeah, it turned out bigger than I kind of expected.
having Game 6 in Kansas City instead of being in Toronto for it was definitely nice. So,
yeah, that whole – I mean, the last time we recorded was just before Cueto's Game 5 against Houston and – And, or wait, was it?
It was right after.
It was right after it, yeah.
Because we talked about how great it was.
Right. So, you know, going in – and the two teams that we didn't want to face, you didn't want to face the Astros, and I didn't want to face the Blue Jays, and the Royals still had to face them both and still managed to beat them both. And basically, you know, Houston gave Kansas City everything that we wanted, and Toronto was really tough too. I mean, even winning, you know, the first game, there were still a lot of tense moments. The second game, obviously, the Royals had to make that big comeback, and, you know, that felt great to get that, and that turned out to be huge, like immense. So much turned on just getting that second game because, you know, game three, Cueto just got bombed, and that was about
that was ugly.
That was just miserable, but the Royals never even gave up. You know, I mean, they still made it pretty interesting at the end. You know, then obviously blew them out in game four, but when Toronto won that game five against Estrada, especially since they couldn't get any deeper against Estrada, and he gave them what, 7 1/3 innings.
Yeah,
that, you know, you had David Price warming up. You felt kind of like if you got Estrada out in the fifth, they would have to go to Price because they burned so many guys in the previous two games, and that never happened. And so it set up Price and Stroman on regular rest for game six and seven. And I mean, even if they came back on Price, you don't want to face him again. You just don't. And so game six really kind of set up as like, all right, if the Royals lose that, then that's a lot of pressure on a team to, you know, not lose that third one. Because at that point, Blue Jays don't have a lot to lose. You know, they've got the momentum, if it exists. They've kind of got the Royals on their heels. They've got Cueto going game seven against them, who didn't pitch well the other time. And so that game six felt kind of like, okay, I mean, yeah, the Royals, you know, they still get another game, but it's not quite like a regular game six. And so to come away with that one and just, you know, really the best way they could have done it was exactly how it happened. They just came out, Zobrist hits a home run in the first, and you kind of get that out of the way. You're like, okay, if nothing else, we're going to score on David Price and we have a lead. And, you know, added a homer in the second. And then down the line, they ended up, you know, getting an insurance run, make it 3-1. You know, so felt pretty good at that point. But God dang, that game was just tense through everything.
It was, oh my God, it was so nuts. And my parents were there, and I asked my dad, they were at game seven in 1985. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, what was better, being at game seven or that game six? And he definitely, you know, no question, said game six. I mean, it's a little bit, obviously, you know, game seven, 11-0. It's not, it was just kind of a get a lead and party, which is fun in its own right.
Right.
But, you know, and the only reason I even asked for the comparison was just because of the stakes. You know, winning the ALCS is obviously just such a huge and great achievement. You know, winning the World Series, obviously bigger. So that's, but I mean, that
was actually, we're actually recording on the 30th anniversary of the game six.
That's right. Too. That is so, right.
So,
and there's, and it was the, I believe, game one of the Blue Jays series was the 30 year anniversary of the day that the Royals eliminated them, if I'm remembering correctly.
So, yeah.
I think that was right. But anyway, the I mean, you want to talk, like, I guess it might have been slightly more epic if it was a game seven, just because game sevens kind of carry that finality to them.
Throw everything, do or die.
Yeah. But being game six and still, I mean, that was about as good a baseball game as you could have hoped for. And everything that you sign up for as a baseball fan was in that game. I mean, you had, you know, four home runs, and then you had, I mean, the defense from both sides. I mean, the Blue Jays were making great plays. The Royals were making Hosmer's jumping up, stabbing line drives. Moustakas is diving for line drives. People are, you know, Ryan Goins is making backhanded plays, and
Tulowitzki is making plays.
Ben Revere is robbing home runs for Salvador Perez. And, I mean, just all kinds of really great. You had controversy with Mike Moustakas's home run. You know, was it a home run? Was it fan interference? You know, the initial ruling was home run. The replay ruling was home run. And at first, people were like, man, the Royals got a gift. But the more and more people started watching it and analyzing it, by the end of the game, it seemed as though everyone in the studio and the announcers at the game were all kind of in agreement that it was a home run. And it seems the national perspective is that way, because people still aren't really talking about it. They no one really made a big deal about it.
They're talking the more next about day. The strike calls to Navarro in the ninth.
The strike call to Revere was probably the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
As a 2-1 count, two men on, no outs at that point. Was there one out? There was one.
Yeah, because Navarro had hit behind
him. Oh, yeah, that's right. So one out at that point. And
he just has to get in play.
Yeah. And Revere gets a strike call outside the zone. I mean, it wasn't a strike. We'll leave it at that.
But it was close.
But there was
ish.
I mean, it was, you know, a good frame job makes it close. And there's, you know, I had all through this, if there's one negative to how good that series was, it was the, I'll go ahead and say, embarrassing strike zones for, you know, MLB should not be proud of it was inconsistent from game to game. It was inconsistent within the games, it seemed. It was, you know, and it wasn't skewed towards one side or the other. This isn't me saying the Blue Jays got all the calls. Royals benefited from it, especially game one. I think one of the reasons Volquez did so well, he benefited from a loose strike zone that was roughly, and it was hard for Mike and I to tell from our seats, but you could kind of gauge. Yes, you could kind of gauge from Twitter's reaction and such, though, that it was a little bit like that. And, you know, just the whole series, both sides got screwed and both sides benefited from it. And, you know, it's unfortunate that one particular pitch kind of looms so large, because a 2-2 count versus a 3-1 count to Revere makes a big difference.
Huge difference.
But, you know, at the same time, the next pitch was clearly out of the zone. It was a nasty curveball. He didn't have to swing at it, and he did, and he struck out. And then next came Josh Donaldson, who last year his season ended because he couldn't get the out, and this year his season ended because he was the out. So, you know,
and just I'm even, just saying. Even earlier, you know, he hit that line drive to third, and apparently by the StatCast measurements, that's the hardest ball he's hit all year. And
I thought I heard that it was the hardest ball anybody's hit all year. Or was it just him?
I think it was just him.
Okay. It's like 114 miles per hour or something?
It was something like that. And Moose snags it. I mean, there's two runners on. So, I mean, that's huge. And at that point, it was that the fifth inning, sixth inning?
I think it was fifth, but either way.
Yeah,
it was a pivotal moment in the game. Deal.
And there were a lot of different things like that. I mean, just, you know, the Ventura pitched really, really well, basically made one mistake to Bautista, and, you know, he hit it about 8 miles.
Good God.
Almost
good
to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes building.
Yeah, landed in my front yard. he crushed that ball.
But even like things like little things that I noticed were like that at bat to Tulowitzki, where I think they got it to 2-2 and he throws a curveball down. But before that pitch, Sal Perez had gone out and they had talked to about it. And I think on the 3-2 pitch, because Tulowitzki took the curve out of the strike zone, they did. I'm not even sure if they put a sign down. And so he throws a curveball down the middle and freezes him. And as he walks off, he's like staring at the first base coach. And there was some suggestion that that's maybe someone trying to look in to get a sign or something. It's like, okay, cool. So that whole stuff happened some more.
Yes.
But just the Yordano glare and things like that. And then you get down to, Escobar having such a good series. But Alex Rios, who was bad all year, gets that extra run. And then you get to the point where, you have to bring, you bring in Madsen and probably a mistake. But at the same time, it's like he's been okay most of the time. And even though it's kind of the heart of the lineup, you still feel like he's a guy who should be able to get those guys out. And so, he gets a guy on, ends up giving up the big homer to Bautista. And there's only five outs left to get at that point. It feels like, oh, crap. You didn't kill the Blue Jays. You didn't double tap or get the brain or whatever zombie analogy you need to do. So that felt pretty terrible. And then you bring in Davis because they knew rain was coming. They didn't want to bring in Davis because they didn't want to burn him because of a rain delay. And then he comes back anyway. And the Royals get the lead back on a really good at bat by Lorenzo Cain that probably doesn't get as much kind of press as his base running after. And by now, I'm sure everybody's read about the advanced scouting and the preparation of everything. And so many things have to go right for that play to work. Hosmer looking fastball, adjusts to the slider, hits it down there. It carries Bautista towards the corner. Cain read it just right off the bat, like just knew it was going to fall for a hit. So he takes off. He never stops running. Gershley knows what Bautista's going to do with the ball. Just perfect. And even Hosmer going, I think Rusty was telling him to turn it, like take a deep turn and try to force a little bit more of a throw and take more attention so that Cain can actually round third. And it's just like, what a freaking play. Like that is an all-time kind of play in franchise history. That's just like, if they go on to win this World Series, that's like a number one, number two type of play. And that's amazing, to just be there and see that. And then Davis comes out and saves it at the end after pretty much unprecedented return from a rain delay.
It was almost an hour.
I mean, you'll pull starters in that situation, and
they did in game one, like you were mentioning against Houston.
Yeah, and so for him to come back, that's just crazy. It's like that doesn't happen with relievers. Like, no, if they warm a guy up twice and don't bring him in, they don't even bring him in most of the time. So for Davis to just come back from that was just like, okay, he is a cyborg. It's the only question, only explanation for it.
And I mean, you could tell he wasn't quite as sharp as he normally is.
First guy. And...
Yeah. But he was still amazing. And still able to get the job done.
85% away Davis is better than a lot of people.
Yeah. And it was, you couldn't have asked for a better game and a better ending, and hats off to Toronto. They had a great season, gave the Royals just a hell of a fight there, and but their season's over. Right. So
sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
That,
that has the makings of a really great rivalry. There's some bad blood between some players. There's lots of insinuations from both sides. There's now a playoff series to build off of, really intense regular season games. So, both teams are set up to compete here in the near future for the next few years. So, this might not be the last time that the Royals see, and for that matter, Houston as well, Houston or Toronto. But you look at the Royals and the last, year, 15 months, how many fan bases that just didn't give a crap about the Royals now just hate the Royals? Like, well, how many have they left in their wake?
I think Oakland doesn't hate us. Oakland's just like, still bitter about losing, but not because of anything that the Royals did. But like anytime you ask if the Royals, yeah, they're rooting against the Royals.
Mm-hmm. You got the Angels, like, and some of it is combined, like last, not just because of the postseason eliminations mm-hmm. for the A's and the Angels, but then early season this year, they played the A's and the Angels and got into it. It was Brett Lowry with the A's and then Yordano Ventura and Mike Trout with the Angels and all that business, whatever the hell that was.
Right.
You know, it was there and there, you know, combine that with eliminating them from the playoffs last year. And, you know, the Angels fan bases, I mean, they were talking trash on Twitter all the time. I hate the Royals, stupid Royals.
Oh, yeah, that's stuff. Right.
So, I mean, you got, there's a couple right there.
Baltimore the does not like the Royals.
No.
And the, I don't like the, Baltimore either,
the,
so.
No, the self-appointed Baltimore Orioles spokesman, Jason LaCanfora, loves to be a gigantic douchebag on Twitter when it comes to Royals baseball. Yeah. In classic Dewey beats Truman fashion, LaCanfora tweets in the eighth inning of game four against the Astros, "Oh, the Royals lose in the playoffs. How are we ever going to get by without them? Oh, well,
and then they win.
I guess we don't know the answer to that question yet because the Royals are still playing and Houston is watching.
And people keep sending stuff to LaCanfora on Twitter too because
yeah, and
sure, that's what we do.
Yeah, because fuck that.
Right.
So, and then Blue Jays were ready to hate the Royals back in August. So it was only made matters worse that they lost and there was a somewhat controversial call involved with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, there was, that's the way the cookie crumbles, as they say, and the Royals are heading to the World Series. So it's really unbelievable to think, you know, not only how far the Royals have come in the last however many years you want to say, but just from when we started this show, I mean, think about what we've been through with.
When we started this show, Eric Hosmer was in AAA.
Yes. And
so Yordano Ventura was like this short guy who threw hard.
Yeah, he was going to be a reliever.
And yeah, Robinson Yamate.
I was about to say he was guy. might not have been the best between he and Robinson Yamate, but there's then you had, I mean, we went through that, and then come to play or the our time, the great our time fiasco mm-hmm. of 2012, which was quote unquote about the All-Star game. But instead led to a 12-game losing streak to open at the very beginning of the season, including nine of those at home.
Ten. Oh,
thank God.
As a
ten
whole
of them was ten at home.
It was and the whole opening homestand.
Just awfulness.
Typified then, by Lou Kochaver giving up like seven runs in the first inning of the home.
Yes.
Open. Just
it all started with Jonathan Broxton beaning home the walk-off run against the A's.
I think he beamed
in the second
Cespedes.
Series of the years. Was it Cespedes? There you go, full circle right
yeah.
there. So that may have been one of the lowest of the lows, at least for this era here. And then even up to last year, I mean, you and I had one of the most dejected shows we've ever had when they got swept by the Astros. And was it early June or May or something?
It was late June.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah,
and they, and then even they were still under 500 after the year. Were 48-50 at one point last year, and it was, you know, trade Hosmer, trade Moose, get rid of Yost. It was clean house. It was everything, and then they turned it on, and here we are. So now it went from July of last year, fire Yost, sell everything, to Yost is all but guaranteed to have his number retired. If they
Pretty
win
much.
Four out of the if they win four out of the next seven games, number three will be on the Royals Hall of Fame. You can book it right now. And Ned Yost better find a place in Kansas City that he considers pretty cozy, because he should live here the rest of his life, because he'll be a living legend. He'll have a statue. I mean, seriously, they're gonna build a statue of this man if they win.
They probably will. I mean, he's won two pennants. No other Royals manager did that.
No. Then you got to think, I mean, it depends on how much longer and how much more success, but I mean, like, I don't know. I won't go that far, but I mean, as far as like legitimate Hall of Fame, I mean, these are the kinds of things that you look at players like, how did so-and-so get into the Hall of Fame? It's like, sometimes you just catch a couple of years and you make really big plays and people remember you. The people that vote, they're humans that vote. So if they, you know, like, you know, who knows? Like
if Bill Mazeroski doesn't hit a home run in game 7 of the 1960 World Series, probably not in the Hall of Fame because his offensive numbers were Frank White.
Yeah.
And he's just he was great defensively, probably the best second baseman of his era, if not a lot of eras. But, you know, it's just that it comes down to that one moment.
Yeah. And, I mean, Ned Yost is right now, by winning percentage, he's the winningest manager in playoff history. So, I mean, now that's something for you.
What
right
is
there.
That? It's that nuts. Is so crazy.
If they win in six, like you and I are both predicting, I mean, he becomes, 22-10 in the playoffs in 2 years with two pennants and a World Series championship. And, you know, of course, it's a lot of things can happen. But, I mean, if just to play things out here, I mean, if that's the way it goes, then start building the statue, retire the number. And I mean, Ned Yost is a Kansas City legend. Then when you have the conversation, you know, who's on your Mount Rushmore for sports figures in Kansas City? I mean, you'd almost have to put Ned. It's so crazy. It's insane.
I don't get it.
And you look at, I mean, Dayton Moore.
It totally has flipped his reputation, and you start to kind of see some stuff. And winning, obviously, is going to make people take a second look. It's like there's an article on Fangraphs and the guy was talking about, okay, so I'm analytical and I don't believe in like this special stuff, but the Royals make me question it a little bit because there are so many just weird comebacks and so many players who probably shouldn't be superstars or, you know, stars, you know, just because their numbers don't, but they rise up to it. So it's like, okay, what's going on here? But then you get into like Moore, and it's for so much of it, it was, you know, he really wanted to build from within, and he wanted to do all this. Tried to get, you know, Gil Mesh and got Jose Guillen and traded for Mike Jacobs, and like he wanted to do normal stuff, and then kind of recognize that okay, let's do something different. On base guys are expensive; they're pricey. You know, power guys, on base guys, and good starting pitching; those are your most expensive things on the free agent market. So how do you get those without spending that kind of free agent money when you don't have it? Well, if you hit for a high average, you're still going on base a lot. And if you put the ball in play a lot, you get a higher average sometimes. And so I there was at some point, and I kind of want to go through and look at some of that contact stuff and see where like it really started to filter through. Cause it was selected. It was a trait that they looked for. And, yes. And you know, they said so publicly, but you can just kind of tell, you know, by everything. And so that was one thing. But then also, you know, you've got, you know, starting pitching is expensive. So what if you get a bunch of average guys and have a great defense behind them? And then if you have a bunch of average guys with great defense, and then you go for all these middle relievers who throw a million miles an hour, and then, you know, you don't need to get a starting pitcher who can go 7-8 all the time. You need him to get through 5 or 6. And that's been what it is. It's crazy. And it's like a lot of teams are starting to copy that now.
Unbelievable.
Teams are copying the Royals.
Well, and what's so crazy, I mean, you know, on this show, we were just so critical of Moore and Yost, and probably none more so than me. And
I think at the time, probably warranted, but at the same time, it's like,
that's what I'm getting at. Like, I think the best part about it is we weren't necessarily wrong for our criticisms, but the best part is it's not just a winning cures all situation. It's not to insinuate that, you know, oh, they just kind of lucked into players that turned out to be good, and so they're winning. You know, there has been some noticeable change in philosophies, in the organization and how it's run. And there was, you know, Dayton Moore, this is the first time he's ever been a GM. Ned Yost, you know, he had experience as a manager once before. But there was, you know, there were some learning, some bumps in the road towards, you know, a learning curve towards how rigid do you want to be in building the organization? How much freedom do you give in this area, in this area? And they, you know, they started incredibly rigid, and that was one of the things that we harped on. And over the last few years, they've eased up on that, and things have changed all the way from the minors going, you know, people you talk to about the organization, and you can see it in the players they bring up. And, you know, we've talked about it before, like after the 2012 season, when Ned Yost was tossing out homers all over the place to, you know, Lorenzo Cain can hit 30 and all that. And that was their goal. Their stated goal was to hit more home runs. And now they don't even talk about really caring about home runs. And then, you know, but at the same time, you know, before that, home runs were rally killers and all this kind of stuff. So there were all these conflicts and these, you know, just they didn't seem like they were being consistent with what they were saying and their philosophies. And there's none of that now. Now they know what team they are. They know what team they built, what team they want to be. And that's what they go to. And it's amazing how when you stop trying to force, hey, we're singles and doubles hitters, or hey, we're walk and hit home, we walk and then we hit home runs. You know, instead of trying to force that philosophy on a team, just seeing them say, hey, we're going to get guys with good contact skills, and not try and instill any sort of you need to walk, you need to take more pitches. Just go up there and play your game and give them freedom instead of trying to be rigid. And look what happened. You know, you can tell Hosmer and Moose and Gordon, and they have more freedom up at the plate now than they did in the 2011, 2012 years. And part of it is just growing and maturing and stuff. But, you know, there's really that kind of freedom. And you see it with Yost and the way he talks about his players, you know, but before it was kind of really seemed like he maybe micromanaged a little bit and would tell, you know, like, oh, this is what we want to do here and this. And basically ever since the quote, sixth inning belongs to Aaron Crow, end quote, that kind of incident where everyone really latched on and said like, oh, that's way too rigid. And you've got to be able to basically ever since that moment, it seems like he's really kind of flipped it and he's been quite a bit more flexible, and he still has his mistakes, not perfect by any means, but yeah. There's been an evolution there, and it's just been like, it's been really great to see. And so crazy that now it's reached that point that other teams want to emulate it.
I don't know what's happening.
It's amazing.
Just don't know.
Amazing.
I looked it up earlier today because Craig Brown from Royals Authority tweeted something out, and it was a list of AL pennant winners since he started blogging. And so he's got Yankees 1, White Sox 1, Rays 1, Tigers 2, Red Sox 2, Rangers 2, Royals 2. And so it's like, oh, wow. So I went and looked at since we've been podcasting, and the Royals, including the postseason, are 431 and 405 since we started this podcast, including two pennants. So,
wow.
And yeah. And I think in the last 2 years, they've won more games. The Royals have won more games than any other team.
Well, I don't know if you heard him on Friday night after the game, we were at Kelly's. Leske was saying that with that win, the Royals locked up the most wins in baseball for the second year in a row.
All right. So
last year they were they were tied with the Giants last year for the most wins, and then this year the Cardinals had 101 and the Royals now have 102. So got to count the playoffs, of course, but you know, there it is. And also of note, I got married on August 9th, 2014. 3 days later, the Royals took first place in the division for the first time in a long time. And they didn't hold it, obviously, but I calculated it. Since I got married, including the playoffs, this I actually calculated this before the Toronto series, so I'll have to add, but they are 144-95, which is roughly a 97-win pace over a normal season, and two pennants. So
So we're going to start a Kickstarter so you guys can go on very relaxing vacations together and can be very happily married for about 60, 70 years.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
And also of note, I mean, if we're bringing these into the account, I was born 30 years ago, same year the Royals won the World Series. And as I mentioned before, while not due this year, my first child is due in February, so we'll call it close enough. And so I'm just saying there's a little symmetry there, exactly 30 years. I mean, it's too close.
That poor kid.
That poor kid, I know.
It's going to feel right? So much it's baseball pain. If I hope the pattern doesn't hold.
Yeah, if they... I don't know. Would you take that though?
I don't know. I was talking to some people on Twitter and I was thinking like, and obviously this is probably not a fair statement, but I was like, okay, you basketball fan, I would trade 2008 for this World Series. I wouldn't do that.
That's tough, man.
But it's also not fair because I've already experienced the winning of 2008 in the national championship. So it's not like we're still waiting for that.
Right.
So it's not really, you know, it's probably not fair, but at the same
time. And that win was so epic. Like right. That was the equivalent of that wild card game in epicness.
Pretty much. And, you know, so I don't know, but I was a baseball fan before I was a basketball fan, and I was a Royals fan before I was a KU fan. So
there it is.
Yes. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. That'd be tough to trade that, but, man, I'd trade a lot.
Indeed, and hopefully, you know, I don't know. I mean, talking to Gary, I get you know, his pitchers, but I don't know. I kind of feel like they're ready for a lot of stuff, and even though the Mets pitchers can start and change things up, you know, the Royals can adjust too, and they've hit Keuchel at different points. I mean, obviously not Houston. They've hit Price a couple times. They've hit Scherzer over the past couple of years. They've hit Kluber. They've hit, you know, they've hit a lot of good pitchers.
And, yeah.
You know, just, you know, and even, not to say that they're going to, but, you know, they're a talented team.
And even though they strike out more against off-speed stuff than the hard stuff, they still
don't strike out.
Strike out less than the average in the major leagues. So there's still an advantage there because the Royals are just so good at making contact. And I mean, I think when you look at Royal strength, contact hitting, kind of frenzy hitting, if you will, and the bullpen and defense, you know, and how strong those strengths are versus, you know, you look at the Mets and you wouldn't say they're an offensive juggernaut. You know, their strength, their offense has been so good because of one player, basically, in Daniel Murphy. And if he doesn't have it, then they need to find somebody else. And that's going to be tough for them, I think. You know, so that's definitely, you know, the strengths of the Royals compared to the strengths of the Mets, I think, you know, if you were to talk net advantage, I think it swings towards the Royals. So over a 7-game series, that doesn't always matter. You know, it doesn't always mean that
that
team's
gonna win.
You
just need one guy to go off. And
yeah, I mean, if Daniel Murphy hits 3 home runs and spreads them out over a couple games, and they happen to be when a couple people are on base, and, you know, next thing you know, the Royals are playing from behind, it could spiral out of control. It's happened before.
Or if one guy ends up being Bumgarner part 2, then
Oh, jeez. That was what I was talking about. Mike and I were talking about, you and I, we were talking in the emails today. I can't believe I allowed myself to type it, but that's like the number one fear, right? It goes, we're talking game 7, all hands on deck, and it's going to be probably DeGrom starting? Syndergaard? Who would start? Game 7?
In a game 7, it'd be Syndergaard.
Syndergaard. Okay. So you got Syndergaard starting and let's see. So it would have been DeGrom right before him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, or no. Yeah. DeGrom right before him.
Because Volquez and Harvey would be in line for game 5. Cueto and DeGrom for game 6.
So you at that point, you've got Syndergaard on the mound and Harvey, who in a game seven scenario can come out of the bullpen, Mats, who can come out of the bullpen. And then they've, you know, coupled that on top of Bartolo Colon and John Neese and Tyler Clippard and then Juris Familia. And I mean, if you really, really wanted to, you could probably bring DeGrom in and put him in, even though he'd only have a day's rest. You know,
just
pitchers have done it before. Yep. Yeah, give him an inning or whatever.
If it's a game seven, what are you saving for?
Yeah, I mean, that's the fear there, is that it gets to a game seven and it's another, you know, 2-1, 3-2 game like it was last year at 3-2. And the Mets just pull out all the stops and say, give it all you got and we'll heal up in the offseason. And you know, next thing you know, it's game over. So that's kind of, if you're talking worst case scenario here, I don't know that it'll get to a game seven. For the sake of my blood pressure, I hope it doesn't.
Yeah.
But
I feel strangely more calm going into this series than either the last two. And I can't decide if that's because so much of this year, and especially the summer and from July on, was basically paying attention to, you know, okay, what's Houston doing? What's New York doing? What's, you know, Toronto doing? And how are they, you know, are they going to be big threats? So much of the attention was to them that I didn't think as much about the National League side, and especially not the Mets. So I guess I haven't given myself enough to worry about them to feel really nervous, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean the Mets were, you know, and I heard somebody say it on the radio too, that is, you know, kind of true, but they got into the playoffs, they weren't getting a wild card because the Central was so stacked in the NL. So they had to win the division, and it was basically an epic collapse by the Nationals in the second half of the season that allowed them to kind of step in and I wouldn't say epic collapse, but a collapse by the Nationals. And you know, they only won 90 games, and they outperformed their Pythagorean win total by a game. So they were about on with what they should have been. And, you know, it's, I mean, you know, Royals only won 89 games last year, so that doesn't mean anything, but
yeah,
you know, it just means that, the, you know, there are some weaknesses that the Mets had to deal with.
That division was Miami, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and a dysfunctional Washington.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
And I didn't... just, they're just...
Not that the Central was like a powerhouse that you kind of thought it would be, but, yeah. I mean, there was still, yeah, you know, Cleveland was good in the last couple months. Minnesota was better than anybody expected.
Yeah. The White Sox had their moments.
They had their moments. They had a little push around the trade deadline or just before the
Sale trade. Had that streak of 10 games with 11 strikeouts or more, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah. Detroit sucked, but
yeah,
it's all right.
Interestingly enough, I didn't realize this until I just looked at their Baseball Reference page, but Paul DePodesta is the farm director for the Mets. I didn't realize that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good old Peter Brand.
Good old Peter Brand. Where are they now? Well, he made it to a World Series before Billy Beane did. Look at that.
That's funny. I like it.
So with that, I think we'll leave you. Just similar to the ALCS, it'll kind of depend on how the series goes. We probably won't be able to record until it's over because it's by the time we record and get something out there, then it's already outdated because we got it. Yeah. So we'll probably just wait till the series is over. So who knows? Next time we could be very celebratory when we speak, and we could be very subdued next time we record. So who knows? But as always, as the season's coming to a close here, it's been so much fun. It's been such a great ride. Thank you guys so much, everyone, for listening. We love seeing you guys out at Kelly's. We love hearing from you on Twitter and in emails and everything else. And, keep listening, keep supporting the Royals, keep coming out to Kelly's, keep cheering on the freaking Royals. We got 4 wins left. That's all they need. And it's title town again. I got 1 vacation day left, and I'm hoping that I get to burn it on a World Series parade. I told my boss this morning, I said, knock on wood, if it gets to that point where the Royals lose, that last vacation day is being burned for that World Series parade. So let's hope that I have no more vacation left in about a week. So we'll leave you with that for Michael Engel. I am Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCityBaseballVault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.
Somebody feels sexy.
Oh, baby.